are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Mike, how hard are you right now?
Oh, man, I've been hard since you said, hi, welcome to Friends with Fantasy Benefits podcast.
I mean, there's not been, in the history of baseball, there hasn't been many guys that have been banned from the sport for life.
We are Friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Can you get more chill than you were before?
I don't know. I've been told that I've been a little bit too excited at times, and that's not just by males. I'm talking by also females. So,
we are Friends with Fantasy Benefits.
So that's
congratulations. It really changes your life once you get to that point. So
it's 900, and I got about 15 people that want to hear what I got to say, and about 950 robots that follow me.
We are Friends with Fantasy Benefits.
It's about 11 o'clock Central Time, November 28th, a couple days after Thanksgiving, and I, Mike Werner, am with my boy Matt Thompson. It's kind of crazy. It's been a while. It's nice to get back on the Prospect Show and everything, but it's really nice to hear your voice, Matt.
Yeah, thank you. That's a hell of an introduction. I'll take that.
I'm going into a new year with a different plan, a different way of thinking, just an overall different mindset. So, I'm going to stay a little bit more chill.
Can you get more chill than you were before?
I don't know. I've been told that I've been a little bit too excited at times, and that's not just by males. I'm talking by also females. So,
ayo. No, I don't know.
Anyways, Christmas is coming, and we thought, why not give the fans what they want? And that's some prospect news. The AFL just got over with. We have Ohtani talk going on seemingly every hour of every day. There's a new trade partner and for Stanton as well, and there's just so many things going on in baseball right now, but we're like, let's give the people what they want before Christmas starts, and there's all this mayhem, and Black Friday already passed. But regardless, this is episode 331 of the FWFB podcast, and I am a little bit hoarse, so bear with me there. But other than that, we are going to go through a few things today. I already posted on Twitter, we're gonna talk a little bit about the AFL and talk a little bit about the Braves situation that I know you, Matt, have some really good thoughts about. And then we're going to kind of round things out with a little bit of Rule 5 draft talk. There's a few names on there that I find quite interesting, guys that we have talked about on this very show in the past. So I'm pretty excited to talk to you again.
Yeah, thank you. You too, man. It's been a while.
It has. I know you and Justin missed me, but, work keeps me pretty busy. Here and there. So, anyways, let's get things started. You can follow me on Twitter at Mike Werner FWFB. You can follow Matt on Twitter at MD Tomp FWFB. And I'm gonna let you kind of take the stage here about the Braves situation, because I just want to get this out of the way. Personally, all I know is that they've lost a lot of guys, and one of them being Kevin Maiton. But if you could just go more in detail about what happened, what this entails in terms of fantasy owners, especially in keeper and dynasty leagues, what they need to look for, and what we might see here in the next few months.
Sure. Basically, what the Braves got in trouble for doing what every team does, but they were more cocky about it, and I guess MLB did their investigation, and John Coppola, rest in peace, left everything was a trail of emails, so it was very, very easy to figure out what he was doing, because I guess the emails were in depth, which is pretty stupid. But basically what they did is, you're familiar with the bonus caps everybody has, every draft. The bonus pools for international players, it's similar to how it is for the draft, but you're staggered by record.
Yes.
The chunk of the pie, bigger chunk of the pie goes to the crappy teams, and the Braves have been one of those crappy teams, especially the last 3 years where this is kind of focused on. Basically what they did was, a little background is, all those Latin American prospects go through these training facilities. Basically when they're... It's equivalent to like a communist country. When you're 14 years old or whatever, they take you from your parents and you go to school to play baseball full time. That's what you do. And there's people that kind of take over and kind of become your quote unquote father figure, I guess, because they mold you into these little baseball players and develop relationships with major league teams to come sign you. They're called buscans, but the fancy word for trainer, I guess, but they're whatever. And basically what they have is teams develop relationships with these people. And for instance, with the Kevin Maitan was the prize of the 2016 international market. And everyone knew about him. The Braves were on Maitan for years before they even signed him, which is also illegal. Every team does that as well. They were in a relationship with the trainer that he had. So they signed a bunch of guys from the 2015 class for more money than they should, to make sure that Maitan got a bigger share. Well, his trainer got more of the share. So they kind of kept Maitan on ice for the Braves, essentially. And they grabbed him and a bunch of other guys. And with that money that they should have used in the 2015 class that they repurposed, they should have gone over their limits and not been allowed to even spend on 2016 class, which is why they lost all these players. So it's a complicated thing. They also lost Jaewon Bae, I believe he's from Taiwan. I apologize if he's not. Middle infield prospect from out that part, which they gave him extra non-contractual things to help him sign a contract for lower bonus money. Drew Waters was a second round pick this year for the Braves. Very toolsy outfield prospect who will definitely be in the top 15 prospects when that comes out. They ended up reneging on this deal, but John Coppola promised him a car. They promised him he'd buy a car signed for a lower bonus. Which I don't know why Drew Waters wouldn't be declared a free agent then. But
all I know, I mean, you're continuing to explain. I read the overall just landscape of what happened, but Rob Manfred seems like a guy that's pretty reasonable, and he hasn't banned. There's not been in the history of baseball, there hasn't been many guys that have been banned from the sport for life. And
2 years in a row, though.
Now, 2 years in a row, we have some front office guys from one of them from your very own team that have found a way to just be banned from the league. And that's just insane to me. So you can carry on, but the fact that these things are happening behind closed doors, I have a feeling that more of this is going to come out as the years go on, because you need to find edges somewhere. And I'm assuming that that's where a lot of guys or front offices have, been able to find it.
I guess one of the things with the international market too is the rules are very, very, very known. There were well-known rules. They're documented everywhere. They send every team gets an email, I guess, for lack of a better word, in the beginning of the international markets outlining the rules. So when the rules are that clearly outlined, you also know exactly what you can get away with. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know exactly what line not to cross.
Mm-hmm.
And, every team does it. The Red Sox got popped for this a year ago. And they lost three players because they were they wanted one player. They signed two additional ones from the same trainer. So that trainer would still get the same percentage as he would have gotten if they signed one for higher. It's a mess to get underneath these numbers that Major League Baseball is making teams go underneath. So they're doing, running all these numbers and laundering money, essentially, to get them into different players. So certain trainers still get their cut, and you can still build that relationship. Like the Washington Nationals, I was reading this on Maitan. Maitan signed with the Braves for $4.1 million. The Nationals, and I guess from what I was reading, at the 11th hour, end quote, came in with an offer of $10 million to sign Maitan, and he turned it down. Like,
oh, wow. What? Yeah.
Because there were so many other deals that were already made. Maitan was a Brave years before he could legally be a Brave, essentially. They put him in a house in America to get him out of Venezuela, and it was crazy what they got away with. And Coppola was pretty stupid. I guess he didn't have a really good reputation in front office, and you can see why. The one thing I do want to say that upsets me about this is John Hart. John Hart was the president of baseball ops in Atlanta. Knew it, so a guy like that knows exactly what's going on, right? He has his finger on the pulse of everything. And if he says he doesn't, he's lying.
Yeah.
He got to resign on his own terms because he's part of the good old boy network for baseball. And I wouldn't be surprised if he has another job in our front office in a year. End that rant. But you know how that goes. Once you're a good old boy, you're a good old boy for life.
Yeah, I don't necessarily think he'll have a job back in the future. I mean, this is a pretty serious deal.
but he doesn't get repercussions from it because he bounced.
Yeah.
But you know, everyone knows Maitan, 17-year-old, stock's kind of down a little bit.
Yeah. Before you continue, give me three guys of the other 12 players that they lost other than Maitan that we should be keeping on our radar for the future and just really, you know, not necessarily diving into, but at least keeping tabs on for where they sign and the possible best situations that they could land in.
Well, real quick, these players are eligible to sign on December 5th, coming up here in a week or so. But they're obviously not going to because the Ohtani situation is still out there, and that's kind of taking from the same bonus money. And teams aren't going to blow their shot at Ohtani because they want to sign a 17-year-old. That's just not going to happen. So, you know, they're not going to sign for a little bit. They're eligible to sign on the 5th of December. They won't sign then. But one guy, Maitan's obviously the guy, but Junior Severino actually might be the guy. He signed for $1.9 million in 2016. He is a switch hitting offensive first middle infield prospect. Probably would have played short, but Maitan was there. They wanted to play Maitan at short. But I think he's a guy that showed some pop in the Gulf Coast League. He slugged .444 as a 17-year-old, and that's a really heavy pitcher league. So against college talent, pretty much. So he's a guy to track for sure. Junior Severino, spelled with a Y.
Yeah.
So keep track of that. Levon Soto is another quick twitch shortstop. He's probably better known for the defense, but guys like him that are athletic can easily come around. You never know. Yancy Peña also listed as a shortstop, but he's probably a third baseman. He's got some power, so keep that in mind. And then from the pitching side, the best guy is Yeffrey Del Rosario, got $1 million, 91-94, touches 97 with a sharp breaking ball as a 17-year-old.
Awesome. Awesome. All right, let's move on from the Braves talk, and let's talk about a little bit better in terms of what will set our moods. So how about some Arizona Fall League talk? And
sure.
You know, there's obviously a lot of players that, you know, studded out. Obviously Ronald Acuna, who, you know, I would like to say I'm not gonna say we were the first to put a lot of fantasy owners onto him, but I will say we were one of the first. So I, you know, we're not a show that likes to gloat on our wins, and we certainly take our fair share of losses in terms of trying to predict future output for some of these prospects. But Ronald Acuna, and he might not even be a hit really in the long scheme of things, but at least for now, we did predict that Acuna would end up rising up prospect boards fairly quickly, and we did this more than a year ago, and he's definitely fulfilled that. So I do want to give us some props for that, and you know, at least give us some, you know, a little bit of nice kind words for people that are just listening to the show for the first time to know that we do know what we're talking about in some way. So
yeah, I might pull a muscle. I'm patting myself on the back a little bit, just trying to sit down at this awkward angle. So apologize.
You know, I just wanted to kind of freelance this. We'll talk about some guys that maybe impressed us and some other guys that might not have in the same vein. But, you know, one guy that I'll just bring up to start off with, and he wasn't necessarily somebody that made a, you know, big splash in the Arizona Fall League or anything like that. But Tyler Beede, and the only reason I want to bring him up first is because he does have a pretty good chance of seeing some major league time next year, especially right now with the Giants rotation looking, you know, somewhat the same from last season, but we don't know what's going to happen. And there's really not a lot. There's definitely not prime pitching on the free agent market. Other than Yu Darvish, you're looking at a lot of really mediocre talent there. So unless they're going to grab somebody like Chris Tillman or just more of a mid-level arm, John Lackey, Jaime Garcia type, they're really going to be looking at somebody like Beede. And thus far in the minor leagues, he has been fairly average to a little bit above average. The offerings have been pretty stable, and I've watched him a lot at Vanderbilt where he went to school, and I've always been fairly high on him, and I never think that he will be a fantasy ace, nor do I think he would ever be a fantasy two or three. But at least this last season, he ended up, you know, missing a lot of the year with a groin injury. He ended up getting hurt in July, so he comes over to the Arizona Fall League. You know, 8 earned runs in 16 innings pitched, but a lot of that was in a 5-run start. So he ultimately had 4 starts, one of them being bad, 3 of them being pretty solid. The offerings looked all right. I'm not going to say that he looked, you know, spectacular out there or that he even opened some eyes or anything, but I do want to say that I think Beede, coming to the AFL, having a pretty decent showing and showing that he you know, still was able to throw his pitches, get his command in order a bit is certainly something I like. Now, if you look at his season as a whole, and if you're just looking at the numbers, high fours ERA last year, only six quality starts in 19 games started overall. He had a drop in his strikeout rate, and he also had a jump in his home run rate. But if you dive into it a little bit more, his command was getting a little bit better. His ground ball rate stayed relatively good, a little bit over 50%, and he was pitching in the PCL. So I, in general, I think that some people might have their stock a bit down on BD, but I actually think he is a fairly safe option. I don't think that his upside is necessarily great, especially not as high as I might have thought a couple of years ago. But I do like BD as somebody that maybe you can buy right now for a little bit less cost than you might think, and he probably will be somebody that is pretty serviceable for the next, you know, 4 to 8 years. So I just want to mention that about BD.
Yeah, I wrote BD up. I did the Giants already on my prospect thing, which those will all be out in our draft guide that we have coming out this year. But I wrote up BD, and a lot of what you said is 100% true. I think, you know, people bag on him because you look at the numbers and stuff, but you got to forget he's in the PCL. He doesn't have stuff that blows you away. The fastball is the best pitch. It's a plus pitch for me.
Yeah, he can manipulate it too in multiple ways.
I was just about to say, he cuts it, sinks it, you know, can kind of put it where he wants. The rest of the arsenal is all, there should be all average pitches at least, so you're not looking at anything that's a detriment to him. But people forget he led the Eastern League in 2016 with a 2.81 ERA. Yes, that's a huge pitcher's league, and he was in the best pitcher's park for it, but still, 2.81 ERA is a 2.81 ERA. He gets by with heavy ground balls, and that's a recipe for success when Brandon Crawford is your shortstop. So that's going to be a nice thing. He'll be in the major leagues next year, and I think he's ultimately the long-term number three starter for the Giants. I like his stuff a lot, and I don't think he gets enough credit. And pitchers like him get slept on a lot in these fantasy circles.
I agree. Who's somebody that you either liked or disliked their performance in the AFL?
Performance didn't show much, but you know, everyone, Sandy Alcantara from the Cardinals. Everyone, you know,
he looks good. He looks good.
Throws 100 miles an hour. You know, all that stuff. But he actually got awarded. You know, they do all these. First of all, a little side rant here. What's the number one argument you hear when you look at statistics from a player? Oh, small sample size, right? Small sample size. But then, you know, then you get people writing, MLB.com prospect people writing these massive articles about what they learned from the fall league. It's like a 12-game sample. Like,
yeah, and you definitely can't use crazy stats for it.
No. So,
you know, and I just talked about BD's stats, but it was more just saying, hey, he had one bad start out of three, and it was more of a tune-up, but you get the point.
These stats count. I mean, but what they do is they confirm or make you think a little bit about your previous thoughts about guys. That makes sense. Like, you use these as further evidence that maybe he is a reliever. You know what I mean? The stuff like that. But the stats mean nothing. But anyways, Alcantara was, you know, everyone knows he gets the velocity numbers up real high, 100, 101. He actually got voted best changeup. And that's a massive development because he has a decent off-speed pitch. If he can get that changeup, that changes his long-term projection from back-end reliever to potential frontline starter.
I don't know about that yet. He's very similar to somebody Luis Severino now.
For sure, definitely. He's not any part of finished product. And how ironic is it, too, that the two guys we both mentioned are rumored pieces for Giancarlo Stanton.
Yeah, well, everybody on the Cardinals right now is a rumored piece for Stanton.
This is true.
We were talking about a pre-show, but I'm over it. If you guys are listening to this, I'm so over the Ohtani and the Stanton talk. Like, I just want them to go somewhere. I just want them done. I want it to be over with, because that's all I read on MLB.com or any other place that you go to. It's just a lot. Other than the fact that today all I heard was Eli Manning rants, which is hilarious because it's not like Eli Manning was setting the world on fire or anything. But regardless, I digress. Keep going.
No, Eli Manning, is he a Hall of Famer? That's a debate for another podcast. But, you know, you get another guy that I liked from the Arizona Fall League is, I'm going to go offensively this time, and it's not a real big name. But it's Sheldon Neese. I think the name is Neese. I don't know how to pronounce it. It's spelled N-E-U-S-E. big third base prospect from the University of Oklahoma. He was part of the Sean Doolittle, Blake Treinen trade this summer. He went over to Oakland, showed some monster pop, backed up his 16 home runs that he hit in tough environments. As a prospect now, he's a little bit thicker body type, but I think he can hit. He's an under-the-radar guy. I'm not going to tell you know, Acuna and Robles look good because you know that, but Sheldon Neese is a guy that I think you can look at looking forward. Unfortunately for him, he just got traded to Oakland, and they have Matt Chapman at there, and he's pretty much a stud. So, but he's trade bait or DH, or I like Sheldon Neese.
Yeah, I really didn't get a lot of looks at him, so I'm just going to have to take your word for it there with him, and he's not somebody that really...
He wasn't nobody was really talking about him. Everyone was talking about Austin Riley, another third baseman.
Yeah, I was going to bring him up later. I mean, I guess we can bring him up now. He still has some plate discipline issues, and that's never going to change, probably. But I still like Riley. I don't have any issues with Austin Riley. I think that the power's plus. I mean, his profile is just easy to project. I think that he, especially in SunTrust Park, if he makes it to there, unless he gets traded or whatever, I think that Riley is probably somebody that we will be able to pencil in as like a, you know, 260-ish average with pretty decent home run pop, 30 home runs probably at peak, and then, you know, whatever the Braves lineup is in the next couple of years, hopefully pretty good. So I think that Riley's good, but there's really not anything interesting to me about Riley because in itself, he's another power bat. There's a lot of power right now in the fantasy world, and he just doesn't make things interesting to me.
Yeah, I want to get your thoughts on so you guys know, pre-show, we kind of talk about this. We're kind of just free-flowing, so if it sounds, you know. Luis Urias, Padres.
Yeah.
Shortstop prospect. Kind of, he's likely a second baseman down the road, but he plays decent short. He's getting a lot of talk. A lot of people are figuring out who he is. The high contact rate, like by high, I mean real high. We're talking, I don't have the number in front of me, but it's elite contact. More walks than strikeouts. But he doesn't really have, he doesn't flash any power.
And he doesn't have a loud tool.
Aren't there. Yeah, no loud tool except for the hit tool, which is the most boring tool, but when it's good, it's good. He has nine career professional homers to his name, but he hit a 400 and something foot home run in the fall league. So then you get on Twitter and you're reading Luis Urias is a 20 homer bat down the line and all this stuff, and I'm not willing to commit that much. I mean, with the you know the juice balls are kind of a wild card in all this. But what do you think of Luis Urias long term? Is he somebody you're investing in dynasty leagues? It's a very unique profile. He's like one in a million for real.
Yeah, if you know me and you, I am a whore for plate skills. I mean, yes. That's my shit, yes. Is plate skills. So
he's got it.
He probably had the best plate skills in this fall league of anybody. If we look down the line, I haven't looked at everybody's stats, you know, one on one and compared, but I would say him, you know, possibly somebody like Francisco Mejia, or is right up there. Otherwise, I mean, there's really not a lot of people that can compare in that aspect. So when you see that, I think that, you know, that's definitely something that we can project to be fairly good. Somebody like Josh Bell was not really a power hitter, but due to his plate skills, he's able to kind of alter his swing
and the juice balls.
He's able to alter his swing and make some adjustments that might be able to make his power that he has be used to its full extent. Somebody like Urias, I can see the same thing happening. He's still very young. His stats certainly don't come off the page and at any point in the minor leagues, including last season. But I do think he's going to be a fast track to the majors. His defense is fairly good. He's got some good, he's got just overall good footwork. I think that he is in the long-term plans of the Padres. So if you're looking at defense, you're looking at the possibility of him being up soon, I think Urias is probably a good bet. Am I buying him in dynasty leagues? Probably not, because he just doesn't have anything that's loud. He reminds me of a much better plate skills type Jose Iglesias, except for with not as good defense. So just somebody that in the same vein in terms of home runs and stolen bases, Jose Iglesias. Batting average wise, we probably will see somewhere upwards of 300, maybe even better, to be honest with you. And there is the case to be made. Like somebody like Jose Altuve really wasn't, you know, making a name for himself until later on in his prospect journey. But the power, nobody ever thought he would hit for this type of power. So could that happen to Luis Urias? Sure. Could he end up hitting 20 home runs? Absolutely. But I would say if I'm putting a percentage chance on that, I would say like 15%. And that's really low. Overall, I'm not buying him, but I am intrigued by the plate skills. And if you are somebody that is going to say, you know what, based on his plate skills, I'm going to buy him and see what happens, I have no problem with that. I just wouldn't give up a lot to get him.
Yeah, we're kind of on the same page. I mean, I saw multiple people drop like, oh, he's going to be the next Jose Ramirez. And it's like, pump the brakes a little bit. He doesn't have, you know, I think a better, more apt comp is DJ LeMahieu without Coors Field.
Yeah, and that makes a lot of sense. Maybe not as much speed, but I do like Urias' speed. I don't think that.
Yeah, no, he can run. He just doesn't use it on the bases. The profile is unique. He's actually probably a slightly above average runner, but it doesn't translate. And for people that might not be familiar with him, he was mostly a second base prospect. Now he's playing shortstop for the Padres. He was 19 years old for most of the season, turned 20 in the middle of the season. But at 19 years old, 20 years old, he had a 12.9% walk rate and a 12.4% strikeout rate in Double A.
Yeah. Yeah, and that was pretty remarkable. We've talked about Urias before, and yeah. I think I was a little bit lower before this last season started.
I stock too. I agree. Yep.
Yeah, so he has made anywhere from 8 to 15% jump in my eyes in one season. So if he makes another similar jump in a year, then yeah, we could be talking about a guy that maybe is hitting the 10-10 stolen base home run area with good average, and that certainly plays in fantasy. Batting average is certainly a category that people are lacking nowadays, and stolen bases, and he's certainly a guy that has the ability to do both. So I would say his stock is rising, but I wouldn't give up the farm for him. I think that he's intriguing, but I do think that there's other guys that have the same makeup and profile and might end up fulfilling their upside more than Urias. But again, yeah, he's a good prospect, so I'm not trying to dog him. I'm not trying to be in the middle, but ultimately I think that he's going to end up being serviceable, not great.
100%. He's going to be the kind of guy on your roster that's meh. Put him in and let him go. Yep.
Want to get your thoughts on Monte Harrison. He had a fairly good fall league and is certainly a candidate for 2020. He's getting a little bit of hype. I definitely like him more than Corey Ray, who, you know, didn't have a great season overall and also didn't have a great fall league. So right now I feel like I'm winning any type of bets we had on that. But thoughts on Monte Harrison?
Yeah. He still hasn't curtailed the biggest issue with him, which is the strikeout. But in this day and age, it's not that big of a problem when you're doing what he's doing on offense. And his nice showing in the fall league, skills-wise, I'm not exactly sure what the numbers were, but I know the skill set was there. He was an A-level, A-ball, and high A, a low A and high A. But his cumulative line, 21 homers, 27 steals, only caught four times, so you can look for that to translate. 272, 350, 481. You're looking at as a 22 year old, 21 for most of the season. It took him three shots to master A ball, low A, and he moved up to high A and performed fairly well. Looks like things are starting to click, and this is one of the reasons why, you know, you take a shot on these toolsy guys in fantasy leagues. Because, you know, you get a guy like this that could hit. I mean, he started off as a shortstop when he was drafted. Clearly didn't work out and moved into the outfield right away, actually. I don't think he even played shortstop for the Brewers.
No, but I don't believe so either.
He was a shortstop in high school that was touted as, you know, possibly sticking the Brewers. Didn't mess around, moved him right to center field. He's been playing center field mostly. And he's a toolsy guy, like you said, he strikes out a lot. So, but he's got that pop and that speed. And as you saw, I mean, the Brewers are filled with guys like that. Domingo Santana, Keon Broxton, Lewis Brinson. How do I forget Lewis Brinson? It's guys like that throughout that system. The Brewers swing for the fences. I admire their – I don't want to say they play it like fantasy baseball, but they're the closest to any team out there because they go for tools, man. They're when's the last boring Brewers prospect that's come up on offense?
That's true. I can't recall one. Well, yeah. I'm sure I can. What, Ben Gamel? Matt Gamel.
Yeah, but even he had big thumb for – first and third base until he ripped his apart.
He created a big thump for my lineups. So that's what he did.
Yeah, I like Matt Gamel, except I hated how he spelled his name. As a fellow Matt, I do not endorse the one T. It is terrible.
Yeah. Well, my name is Michael with no A in it, so deal with those problems.
Oh, like Michael Baez.
Yeah. Anyways, I like Harrison, but I don't like him that much. I think the plate skills are in need of some serious work. He was a prep bat, and I think we have put in some prep time at this point, a few years.
Sure.
He's only in high A last season. He had a really good Arizona Fall League showing, but that was in 70 at bats. The story needs to still be written on Harrison. We still have a long way to go, and he's 20 now. So I would say or 22, I'm sorry. So we need to see some real tangible progress this year. He does have loud tools though, and that's, you know, something that's always worth a gamble in keeper dynasty leagues. I guarantee you not a lot of people know who Harrison is, but at the same time, you have some concerns with strikeouts. You have concerns with playing time, especially if Brinson hits and some of these other prospects that they have. And you also have a massive risk in terms of whether he can start tapping into those tools, not just every once in a while, but on a consistent basis. So stay tuned on him. If I had to bet right now, I bet he's somebody that would flame out.
I mean, everything, the strikeouts are the biggest detractor to it, but I mean.
Well, I heard a couple people start comparing him to the Robles and Acunas of the world. And unfortunately, they don't grow on trees, guys. Like, Acuna and Robles are both, in my opinion, they are the type of talents that can transcend organizations. And I firmly believe that Robles is the Bryce Harper replacement. And I also think that the Nationals won't miss many beats just because Robles is that good. I also think that Acuna is going to end up being a first-round fantasy player. We've been saying that forever. But like with Harrison, I just don't think that he possesses – he might have some of those tools, but he certainly doesn't have – he certainly hasn't tapped into it yet. Last year he did go 20-20, and that's something I love. He was probably one of a few players to do that. But still, you're talking about almost 30% strikeout rate, the walk rate cut in half once he went up to high A, and he's 22 years old. I mean, that's not good enough for me.
And all your points are extremely valid, but I will argue that he's still developing. And he can make some adjustments, and David Stearns is the GM in Milwaukee, and he brought some of them guys over to Houston with them. They got a smart crew of guys, and maybe they'll find something.
Hey, there's a chance here. I'm not saying he doesn't have tools, but there's just some other gambles I'd rather take. Let's move on. We talked about Harrison too long.
Yeah, do you want to go real quick on the subject of Acuna? Acuna. It's Ronald Acuna.
Is it Acuna? And I call him Acuna.
Yeah, it's Acuna. It's got that little, I'm going to sound like a complete moron, the little apostrophe thing above the N. So
sure.
It changes how you pronounce it. So I got into this thing on Twitter. Ronald Acuna is a very popular subject on Twitter. So, we were having this debate. It was a civil debate with quite a few respected fantasy baseball industry guys. Yoan Moncada versus Ronald Acuna. Better dynasty asset. And before you answer this question, I mean, my concern, I think the home run output is going to be pretty similar. I think at peak, you're looking at guys that are probably 25-ish home run guys. Acuna probably, I'll give Acuna the slight edge on power because I think that he's got better contact skills, so I think the power will play more. But I do think Moncada's walk totals is going to make his stolen base output greater and thus more valuable. What do you think? I mean, with fantasy baseball nowadays, the 20 stolen base guy is worth more than the 30 homer guy. Just talking about stolen bases independently. So I think you have to go Moncada as a better asset, right?
Oh man, it's close. You're like making me split hairs between two of my lovers. If I were taking a guy now, I probably would lean Moncada, but it is like by the slimmest of margins.
And I'm nitpicking things here, but I'm worried about Acuna not having the green light in Atlanta because he was caught 20 times last year. Yes, he's 19 years old. I get that. He's a full 3 years younger, so I think you have to go Acuna based on that. But Moncada is a guy that I think Moncada has a significantly better chance of going 25-25 than Acuna does.
I don't necessarily think that, but I think that Moncada Moncada right now is the more polished athlete and just overall more ready to produce. But this is, again, like by the slimmest of slimmest margins. I would hope that you're not choosing between the two. If you are choosing between the two, I think the long term, you
let
really
someone
can't
else
lose.
Make the pick. Let yeah. someone else make the choice for you.
The long term upside is about the same. I would think that you and I have talked about Moncada before. We believe the same thing, that Moncada at the beginning of his career is going to be more of a stolen base asset than power. But yep. as he ages, we'll probably switch it up a little bit. We'll probably more of a power guy than a stolen base guy. Fine. Acuna, I think, is going to be used as more of a – I don't think that they're going to let him steal as much in Atlanta once he gets up there. He's also insanely risky because he's still only 20. And, yes, I believe that he is a transcendent talent and that he is going to be a star in this league. But at the same time, we definitely have a better percentage chance of him going through a ton of growing pains this next upcoming season. And we have to see how he bounces back from that. Now, you know, when he first went to high A, he ended up striking out over 30% of the time. He rebounded by going to double A and cutting that even more. And then he went to triple A and cut it down even more. But how much of that is just momentum based and just being on just a red hot run? What happens when he ends up having to get that adversity again in the major leagues? Also, on top of that, we don't know exactly how much of this is just, you know, minor league pitching, the leagues that he's playing in, the pitching that he's playing in or playing against or whatever. So at large, I hope you would not make that decision. I'm going with Moncada slightly, but I do think that Moncada has the longer projectable stolen base upside than Acuna does. But at the same time, I think that they're so similar that it's pretty much, I think that they both have the ability to be first rounders, not next season, but the season after. And that's pretty high praise from me.
Yeah. I like your analysis of that. I agree pretty much in lockstep with that.
I do think that Acuna has the higher batting average floor. So, like, if you're looking at him from a category 100%. Standpoint, the runs is up in the air because we don't know which lineup will be better. Probably both of them will be pretty decent in the upcoming years, the White Sox and the Braves. But after that, you're looking at, you know, RBIs. I think that Acuna probably gets the edge there. Stolen bases, probably Moncada there for a while at least. Home runs, for now, I think Acuna, but it could be in the long run Moncada. You know, and then if you're in an OBP league, it's definitely Moncada on that side of things. So, I mean, it's really splitting hairs. And these could all alternate year in and year out or whatever. But I do like guys that walk, and I don't like the fact that Acuna last year just chose not to walk. He did walk a bit, like 7% or 6.5% for the season, really. But in the years prior, in 2016, he had a walk rate of about 11%. The year before, it was almost 12%. So I don't like that the fact that his walk rate has been cutting down as we've gone on, you know, in his career a bit. Yes, he hit 7 home runs in the fall league, and that is awesome. He had a 4.14 OBP, and he walked 12 times in, you know, 83 at bats. So me talking about his walk rate is certainly pretty stupid right now. Yeah. But again, it's a small sample, and quite frankly, like, these guys are in such a, you know, good environment to produce, like, that I'm not really worried about it. So in my opinion, all in all, I think they're both just stars. But if you had to split that hair, then I think Moncada has the slight edge right now. But people are on the Acuna bandwagon. Like, when a guy produces a season where he has, what do you have, over 40 stolen bases this year total between 44. All three leagues? Yeah. 44. So Acuna had a 2040 season. So people are all over him right now. But even somebody like George Springer back in the day had close to a 40-40 season. And what is he now in fantasy? He just came off one of his best season, in my opinion. I haven't dove into his numbers, but off the top of my head, probably his best season. And he's still gonna be what, a second, third rounder next year, based on the fact that he really doesn't steal too much, and that's not an asset for him. In the minor leagues, if we were to look at George Springer's profile in the minor leagues, we would have said this guy's easily a 30-20 guy, easily. And yep. If you look at stolen base numbers,
45 steals in 2013, by the way.
Yeah, exactly. So
and 24 and 32 the year before. So yeah.
Yeah, if you look at somebody like Springer's major league numbers, I mean, I'm just going to pop them up really fast to make sure I'm right about this, because I'm pretty sure that his profile has remained the same the last few years. So stolen base wise, the last 3 of the last 4 seasons, he has stolen less than 10 bases. He stole 16 bases in 2015, but three of the last four seasons, he's hit 20 or more home runs. This last year, he ended up getting his best value, A, because he hit 30-plus bombs, but B, because he was just able to stay on the field longer as well. He had his second highest at-bat total of any other season. But all in all, my main thing is this. Somebody like Acuña right now looks like somebody that could be a 30-30 guy, and we love Acuña here. But he could very easily be somebody like Springer in the end, who ends up being a 25 to 30 home run bat with 10 stolen bases. If Acuña ends up being a 30-20 guy, he's a first rounder, especially with his batting average. The reason Springer's not a first rounder is because he doesn't steal enough and because he doesn't have a good enough batting average. And his plate skills, while really good on the walk percentage end, the strikeout rate has never gotten better. Same thing could happen to Moncada as well. But, I mean, we're kind of just trying to project what could happen here based on their skills to date. But Springer is a really good example of a guy that, at the time in the minor leagues, when we looked at him, was no shit. He's going to be a first rounder, no doubt about it. Awesome. And he comes out his first year, goes 20 home runs, 5 stolen bases, and since then has really been more of a power hitter. And sure, honestly, a league average one at that. Like, not league average, but just slightly above league average.
Yeah, he's kind of one of those guys on a per game basis doesn't really wow you with anything. It's just, yeah. But I think you hit the nail exactly on the head. You're on fire today. As always.
I'm not really on fire, but I do want to get some more names because everybody knows about Moncada and Acuña. So I want to start diving into some more things. Alex Jackson, he obviously got swapped over to catcher. He had a pretty decent overall showing in the AFL, at least on the hitting side. He had 5 home runs, which is awesome, and 80 at-bats. His plate skills weren't awesome. He had 23 strikeouts in those 80 at-bats with 4 walks. So that's always been the calling card with Alex Jackson. He ended up getting swapped over to catcher and had kind of a resurgence, if you will, in his prospect stock. So I still think that he is worth a gamble, especially with a catching landscape nowadays that is just in need of some type of spark. But you know, other than Zach Collins, I think Alex Jackson is a really nice premier power bat that we can get for almost nothing, I would say. And he still is raw. Is still pretty young, but I think that he's worth a shot. Did you see anything from Alex Jackson that would make you say otherwise?
The strikeout numbers weren't as bad in the regular season
as they were in the AFL.
Yeah, as they were in the AFL. So the red flags aren't completely up yet. I do think he needs to cut down on the strikeouts still, but it wasn't a number that was, in this day and age, you keep hearing me say that, but in this day and age, it wasn't completely detrimental. And like you said, he's traded to Atlanta, and he caught all season. He didn't play any other position. He just caught. He caught and DH'd when he wasn't catching. And the bat showed. He breaked out offensive season. And Atlanta looks like could have. It's still a little bit of ways away. They could have another developmental success here.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Another kind of regular name that everybody knows about is Mitch Keller. He went ham in the AFL. Did really well. The strikeout numbers weren't there, but he, you know, had command. He looks pretty polished. I think that he's going to end up being a pretty serviceable option fairly soon.
Yeah, my concern with him is, you already you hit the nail on the head, is from a fantasy standpoint, he might not get the strikeouts he need, but in a real life standpoint, he gets ground balls at a very nice rate. Prototypical number 2 starter for real life, probably a high end number 3 for your fantasy team. Work with that.
Yeah, absolutely. The batting leader for the whole entire I call it a tournament, but it's not really a tournament. The whole entire league was a guy by the name of Eric Filia. I think that's the way you pronounce it.
Got it, Filia. I think. Yep.
Yeah, late round draft pick a couple of years ago. I think he's outside the Mariners' top 20 prospects overall. But I've seen multiple guys over the last few seasons in the AFL end up leading and batting. And sometimes people put stock into it. Sometimes people don't. But I don't have a lot of love for the guy. I just didn't know if you had a different sentiment.
Not a lot of love to go around for corner outfielders / first basemen with no power.
Yeah. He did have good plate skills.
Yes.
12
very
blocks,
good.
7 strikeouts in the AFL itself, but at the same time, I haven't seen enough tools, especially in his profile and throughout his minor league numbers, that suggest that he's going to be super relevant for fantasy. But he is somebody to keep on the radar because he you know, is a Seattle prospect. They definitely like to churn through their corner outfielders and corner infielders. So we will stay tuned there.
Decent, like you said, good play skills, decent amount of speed for a first base prospect. He'll probably could steal you a handful of bases. But like you said, the power's not there. And yeah.
I mean, for reference too, you talked about Urias. He hit 443 this, you know, this fall. So that's certainly, you know, in comparison, 483 overall for Eric Filia. I believe last year it was Adam Engel that led the AFL and got the batting title for the AFL. And he is a no name prospect for the White Sox, kind of a speedster type guy. So
really good defensive player.
Yeah. So that puts things kind of in perspective. Matt Theis, he had a pretty serviceable fall league. What are your thoughts on him? He was obviously drafted by the Angels. Do you have any, different thoughts than initially on him?
No, not really. Former catcher, moved to first base. Again, he's an OBP stud, but I don't think he has enough power to be an everyday first baseman, and he can't play anywhere else.
He stole eight bases this year in two different levels. He made it to double A in the end. Obviously, he was a college bat, so it's not like, you know, that big of a deal that he's in double A now, but he did steal eight bases. Do you think that that is part of his game long term? Because I personally don't.
No, I don't. He does nothing to quiet the concerns of hitters that come out of the University of Virginia. A lot of them can't shake the stigma they get there. They're all high OBP guys. Remember Mike Pappy and I think he's still with the Indians. And Derek Fisher's kind of in the oddball in that group. But everyone else is walks a lot, but doesn't hit for a lot.
You loved your boy from this last draft, though, from Virginia.
Adam Haseley, yeah.
Yeah, you love that guy.
Jury's still out. I might have been a little high on him, but I'm still sticking with my boy. He's a different type of player. He's a center field slasher type, so hopefully his game sticks. But it was decent, but he didn't do enough to as he should have in the Sally League as a high draft pick. But
yeah, to talk about first rounders that in my opinion are pretty mediocre talents. Corey Ray. With 231 in the AFL, this coming off a pretty mediocre season. But I do want to talk about Lucas Ursegg, who is obviously another Milwaukee prospect. And overall, he didn't have the best AFL in the world, but we have talked about Ursegg before. I'm pretty high on him. I think he was in my top 10 at the position at third base. Have you changed your tune on him at all, or how are you feeling about him? Where's your stock?
I still like him. I mean, he was in a really tough offensive environment in the Carolina League this year, and he fared fairly well for being young for the level. 256, 307, 417. Doesn't jump off the page. 15 homers, but 33 doubles. That's what I like the most. I still think he can be a 20-ish homer bat, 22, 25 homer bat. In Milwaukee, if he gets there, I think the defense at third base is good, and the concerns are he came out of a small school, but he was a guy that was he went to Cal and had some off season or off the field. Some incidences happened. I don't know what it was. Family, I think something family related, so he had to transfer closer to home and went to Menlo so he could play right away and be draft eligible. And the stock was up after a nice 2016 and. The tough offensive environment, he's teammates with Isan Diaz and Monte Harrison, who we talked about earlier. Tough place to hit. But they did think highly enough of him to promote him to AAA for the playoffs. So that should tell you something.
Yeah, I'm still an Ursegg fan. I don't know if he is a difference maker quite yet for nice fantasy, but I do like him overall, and I certainly love his ballpark. So we'll see what happens there, but I'm still buying him. Okay, we have a few other guys that I want to talk about. I definitely want to talk about Lourdes Gurriel because you were one of the guys that was high on him.
Yeah.
And, you know, overall, he hasn't had a bad year. He didn't have a bad AFL either. He has been fairly mediocre, but it's not that surprising. It's more or less, you know, we need to see where he goes. He's still 24, so we're kind of hitting that spot where, like, you know, the train wheels need to come off at some point. We need to feel better about his fantasy situation, but where are you at on him in terms of being high on him before earlier this season and, you know, now probably heading into a 2018 where he'll at least start the year in AAA? Maybe he'll start in AA, but I think, in my opinion, he'll start in AAA. Where are you at with him right now?
I was probably a little aggressive on him. I know the numbers itself aren't great, but it's
he's also, looked all right, though. He's looked all right.
Yeah, he looked okay in the fall league, but the numbers for the season weren't great. But that comes with the obvious caveat. This was his first year in America. I was trying to assimilate to a new culture. You kind of tend to see to throw out numbers like that for guys that take non-traditional paths to the pro ball here in the States. Came on a little at the end of the season, but he still ended up with an OBP sub 270, which isn't great. But, you know, I think
he pulls the ball a ton, though. And he
does.
Really
he doesn't
good
strike
contact
out.
Skills.
Yes,
yeah.
He doesn't strike out, but I wish he walked more, but he's kind of like his brother in the sense that you never heard those saying, you know, walk off the island, right? that's very true in this case. I think ultimately he's a utility projection, can play anywhere on the diamond, and I think he sees time in Toronto next year because they want to get some money out of this big investment. I think he starts next year in Double A. I think he performs fairly well. Probably carves out a nice long-term utility role with the Blue Jays.
Well, the reason I wanted to bring him up to you is actually because I think he is a really good buy low. I don't think he will ever have premier upside, but I do think that people are going to look at the numbers and they're going to say, oh, he's just mediocre. But I think that there's a ton of projectability here. I think that we will be talking very differently about Gurriel next season, just in general. I think that his average is going to be much better. I also think he's going to hit double the amount of home runs he hit this year. And I think he's going to steal a few bases too. So I don't think that he's going to be some star-studded player that you're going to be able to use day in and day out. But I do think AL-only owners could definitely draft him and redraft this year as just a last-round flyer that could play right now. Because defensively, yeah. I think he's pretty much ready. And, I mean, really, they don't have Devin Travis over there at second base who gets injured perennially. And other than that, there's probably some way somehow he could carve out some playing time. So I like Gurriel a good amount this year just because I think that he has enough tools that haven't shown yet on the stat page that people can still buy and probably buy for almost nothing.
Yeah, it's worth noting. I'm looking through my notes on Gurriel. He had a hamstring injury that caused him to miss the beginning of the season. So on top of assimilating to a new country, you also had to deal with an injury that delayed the start of his year till about May, end of May. And like you touched on earlier, that strikeout rate is only about 16%. I think that improves next year. And in this day and age in baseball, guys, high contact guys are going to become a commodity, and he's that type of guy. He can play everywhere. I think the floor is ridiculously high for someone who put up his numbers as poor as this.
Yeah, I mean, he did strike out a lot in the AFL, but, you know, who cares? Everybody's being aggressive in that league anyways.
Yeah, tired. Everyone wants to go home. Half the people don't want to be there.
Well, it's a showcase, and everybody wants to show their stuff, and everybody's swinging. So,
yep. Signed a seven-year deal, too. So
anybody want to break up?
I think we did a pretty good job of covering it. I mean,
well, I do want to bring up a lot of other guys. I want to give you at least an opportunity to, some pitchers that I'll just kind of highlight really quickly. Max Fried, somebody we've talked about a good amount. He studded out in this thing, was looking pretty much top notch. Like the overall, his offerings were looking legit. He looks like he's ready. His injuries have kind of been behind him. If he can get himself another, 50 to 75 innings, healthy innings, I think that we are talking about a guy that might actually be able to tap into some of that really good prospect pedigree that we saw from him a couple years ago. So I really think Max Fried is a buy right now. The problem is I think everybody else knows it. So your time to really buy low was last season. But either way, I think that he still is a really good prospect to own right now just because he does have the upside to be a number two or so.
Yeah, everyone forgets Max Fried. Everyone's kind of tired of hearing him about him as a prospect because I feel like he's been around for a while. But he almost went first overall in that draft. They couldn't get him to sign for the bonus terms they wanted, so he ended up falling. Things could be a lot different because Houston wouldn't have Carlos Correa; they'd have Max Fried instead.
Yeah. Well, the little that I saw Fried, he was topping out somewhere in the 94 range. I know some people have said 96. When I saw him, it was more of a 94 area. But, from the left side, it's fine. And his curve, as usual, plus changeup, looked pretty good. A guy with three serviceable pitches, Atlanta, SunTrust Park might be an issue, but I don't even care about that right now. I just want him to be healthy. And if he's healthy, I think that he'll provide value for you. So I like Fried a lot.
I got a name for you. If you are looking for potential prospects, that he's kind of under the radar. Yes, he was a first-round pick in 2016. He was Max Fried's teammate in the Fall League, TJ Zoik, for the Blue Jays. And the reason why I bring him up is he's a lot of projection here. You know, kid born and raised in Ohio, played college ball at Pittsburgh, so he wasn't highly recruited.
What did he do in the Fall League?
I'm not really sure what he did in the Fall League. I watched him pitch for an inning, and I liked what I saw. He's a massive dude, 6'7", 225. But, you know, the biggest caveat with a lot of guys that are tall like that is it's hard to, you know, repeat your delivery and hard to consistently throw strikes. And he doesn't have those issues. He only walked 19 guys this year in 65 innings with the Blue Jays, obviously, in high A and rookie balls. He's recovering from a shoulder injury. And I think ultimately I think he's a guy that can take a step forward. And I think he's a dude that I'm kind of gambling. I like what I saw. His mechanics are smooth, a little bit wonky, but he repeats them fairly well. And I'm excited about him going forward. He's a little bit under the radar for being a first-round pick. He doesn't really get talked about. And Toronto does a decent job of developing arms, kind of unconventional way. They had
Aaron Sanchez.
They messed with the bullpen. Roberto Osuna was supposed to be a starting pitching prospect, and they – called him up from A-ball, and he's been their closer ever since. Like, they do things unconventionally, but they do a decent job with it. And like I said, 6'7 guys that can throw strikes, that's a rare combination. And he has, you know, he's got the perceived velocity will be a lot higher than the actual velocity because he's so tall. I think he's a guy that can sneak up on people. TJ Zeuch, Z-E-U-C-H.
Yeah, I like the name. I like the name a lot. I honestly hadn't really thought about him, but it was more or less, you know, just an oversight. There's so many pitchers nowadays.
Oh, that's crazy. Yeah, it's impossible to cover everybody. And in the Fall League, you don't really get many studs. Like, the last 2 years we had Reyes, which is an anomaly. But you found out why, because he was suspended and they wanted to knock off games. And then you saw Mitch Keller this year, which you don't really see pitchers like that in the Fall League, but he was making up time from injury. So
Well, Mitch Keller, like we already talked about, doesn't have the highest upside, but I do think he's major league ready. And I'm actually shocked he wasn't that big of a factor last year. But at the same time, like, I'm watching the Pirates and Nationals now.
Way too slow with pitching promotions. It's crazy.
Yeah, it makes sense. But I like the name a lot. I'm not going to sit here and pretend to know anything about him because I really don't. But I like the name based on what I'm looking at in terms of stats and, you know, other things. So keep it on your mind.
Yeah.
How about, let's see, let me look through some more pitchers that impressed me a little bit.
Justin Sheffield got a lot of pub for the Fall League show.
Yeah, him and Albert Abreu. And I in my opinion, Abreu looked better. Albert Abreu.
Yeah.
I don't know if you want to give a few minutes on him, but we can if you want.
You've got him from Houston, hard-throwing, kind of hard-throwing right-handed pitcher.
Still could be a bullpen arm, but, you know, a lot of going back and forth.
Kid from the Dominican, 6'2", but he's small frame, 175. I think he's a little bigger than that, but throws hard, good advanced command and control for someone. He's 22, but he's only got 270 innings in his belt for a pro career, so he's not as advanced as a 22-year-old normally would be. But I like him going forward. He's a Yankees prospect, so there's no buying him on the cheap. But I'd rather have him over Sheffield, definitely.
Yeah, right now I would still lean Sheffield, but it's not – honestly, I'm really not looking at either of them. They both did well in the Fall League. Abreu ended up holding a 2.6 ERA. He had 23 strikeouts in 27 innings. Nice to see. He does have four pitches. I believe in about two of them, maybe even one.
Yeah.
Justice Sheffield, I've never really been that high on. He's intriguing to me, and I know he's intriguing to a lot of people.
He's a back-end starter in that ballpark.
I agree. Yeah. So – you know, I think that the name that you brought up, whatever way you pronounce it, I think he's a lot more intriguing. Same with Tyler Beede, same with Sandy Alcantara, same with Mitch Keller, to be honest, just based on the park for Keller and especially Max Fried. But any other arms that you want to talk about? I do want to talk about a couple other bats, but for arms, I'm pretty much good at this point.
Yeah, we can go to the bats.
Yeah, I want to talk about Josh Naylor because
earlier.
I'm still on the fan club bus.
Me too. Me too.
On Naylor, he's still he just produces. He is a guy that produces no matter what league he's in, no matter how young he is compared to the competition. I really believe that he's going to be up much earlier than people suspect. And I love that his tools and really his overall game hasn't made itself known enough to where people are like really starting to kind of smell the buzz on him.
Yeah, he's been suppressed by ballparks he's been in his entire career. He's always in extreme pitcher parks. The Futures game was in San Diego, was in Miami. It was in San Diego and then Miami the last 2 years, and he was there in Miami. Former Marlins prospect, so you know
he got traded in the Carter Capps deal.
Yes, I believe so. Yep, Carter Capps, Andrew Cashner, all that stuff. Yeah, and he put on a show in batting practice. It was actually that was like the talk of the weekend almost.
That was last year, right?
Yes, it was in Miami. Yep.
Yeah,
and it was incredible what he was doing there. And if you look at the numbers, he's only got 23 homers to his name in the minor leagues. But like I said, all the numbers, he's been extremely young for his age in every level he's played, and he's in extreme pitcher parks. And he's still, you know, he's hitting for average, walks at a decent enough rate, makes enough contact to not be worried about it. He's an overall nice. He's not going to wow you, but until you dig in deep, then he wows you.
And yeah, his guy. Another plate skills guy. His walk rate jumped, and that's what I was looking for last year. I really wanted his walk rate to jump, and he jumped it to almost 9% for the season, and I love that. I also love the fact that he doesn't. For a first baseman that I project to hit 25 to 35 home runs, who hasn't even hit that many in his whole entire minor league career yet. That just goes to show that it's all about projection. And in my opinion, his power is as good as anybody's. It's especially better than Josh Bell, and Josh Bell's beaming out 25 bombs. So I think that Josh Naylor is a supreme buy low, and I'm going to stay on that bandwagon until, you know what, I'd give it to the beginning of 2019 when he hit, you know what, 20 bombs next season in 2018, and everybody's talking about him, and we're like, hey, just so you know, we reminded you of Josh Naylor.
His progress toward the major leagues was accompanied by a better major league team. San Diego's not really in a win now window, so I think they're going to hold Naylor down a little bit.
I don't think he'll be up until 2019.
Yeah, I think that.
But I do see him hitting Triple A this year. And maybe hitting it for half a season. And if he hits AAA for a half a season and ends up producing pretty well, I think he will skyrocket.
Agreed.
So, you know, that's Josh Naylor for you. Other bats that you want to hit on at all?
We briefly mentioned Austin Riley. We talked about a little my under-the-radar guy, Sheldon Neese. I think we're pretty – a lot of the guys have been talked about quite a bit. Do you have any other names?
Not really. We can highlight – you know, Francisco Mejia, he had a fine.
Yeah, I'm a bit worried about his long-term
fall
future.
League. You can buy shares now still, in my opinion. I think that he's still pretty.
I'm on the opposite of you. We talked about him with Justin on one of the previous shows, and anytime they start messing with catching prospects playing different positions, I get concerned.
Yeah, well, I'm not worried about long-term, not yet at least. I think that they're just trying to have – I mean, he didn't put on a good showing at third base by any means, but – I still think that he's a prime catching prospect based on the pool the way it is. So I don't think there's anything to worry about long term there. Kyle Tucker had a pretty bad fall league. I'm not worried even 10%. So
no, still a top 10 prospect for me.
Absolutely, love him to death. Michael Chavez didn't have the best fall league, but I still consider him to be a pretty decent overall prospect.
He needs a trade.
Yeah, he probably does. I mean, I just hate Red Sox prospects, which is probably not good on my part. But
you're wasting his best tool, which is his arm. We'll move him to first base. And he doesn't have the bat for first base, in my opinion.
Yeah. With Austin Riley, I know I mentioned earlier, like, he's a power-first guy. He is a power-first guy, but that's not me saying that he's not interesting. I just think overall, we've seen this profile before, and everybody's on him right now. So it's kind of hard to really do anything with him in fantasy other than just sit and wait. And once his value either dips or goes high, then we can start assessing the situation a bit more. But at least right now, there's really not much you can do with him. If you have him, you stash him. If you don't have him and you're wanting to acquire him, you're going to be paying too much. So I'd say for right now, just kind of hold steady and see what happens going into next year, because I think that he's talented enough to hit 30 home runs, but the plate skills still worry me a bit.
Yeah, he's always had the power. He flashed that after getting drafted, and I'd like to see more contact, but I don't want him to lose the number one tool he's got on the power by doing that. So I'm with you. Hold tight on Riley. He's not the flashiest guy, but he can produce and put up good numbers, and SunTrust Park is exciting to see what he can do.
Yeah, and you know, Bobby Bradley, true to form, is putting up his best Chris Carver impression. So
good future on. Brandon Moss right there. Bobby Bradley.
Good on him. Got him. Let's talk about the Fall League, or not the Fall League, the Rule 5 draft a little bit, and wrap up here. So the Rule 5 draft, it comes on December 14th, correct? If I'm not mistaken.
Yes, you got that. 8 o'clock in the morning. Only idiots like me know that.
We will all be up at 8 o'clock in the morning. Just hey,
I'll be at work, but I'll be on my phone at work. Definitely checking that out.
We'll just highlight a couple guys that are available that could end up being in spots that maybe are interesting. Mark Appel was obviously the highlight name to be DFA'd. He's been over with for a while. I don't really know what people are hoping for at this point, but it's, you know, the only thing people talk about is the fact that he was the number one overall pick, and that's fine and everything, but he's, if you watch him, which I did multiple times last year, he just doesn't have it.
How fortunate are the Astros, though? I mean, a lot of their drafts have gone completely, like, catastrophically bad.
But they were able to recognize it because their front office and their system is just genius.
Yeah, I mean, they failed to sign a number one overall pick, which normally is the death sentence, and they turned it into Alex Bregman as a comp pick.
Yeah. pretty smooth move.
And then they got Correa with... by default, because he kind of gave him a cheaper bonus too, because he wanted to be the number one pick and they wanted Max Fried.
Yeah. you know, my somebody that I tweeted about earlier, because I love him so much, is Travis DeMeritt. He is available in the Rule 5 draft. Don't know if he's going to be taken, but I still am a believer.
I think he's a good chance to get taken. He's a guy that can play multiple positions on the infield. And fairly well.
He played second base pretty well last year. Yeah. He also really sprayed the ball to other parts of the field, which make me a little bit more confident that he is developing as a hitter. Now, it doesn't scream positive news whenever the Braves are kind of letting you go, but they were kind of armstrong as well. Like there's not many options that they could have went with, and DeMeritt was just kind of they got him for free. They got him for nothing. So it didn't really make a lot of sense to not try him out in the first place. But, you know, double A last year, he still maintained a fairly solid walk rate, still was striking out at a really abysmal rate, 26%, but it was better than any of his other prior stats in any other league. So that he is improving in that aspect, and he's still continuing to walk. I don't think that the stolen bases will ever be really to the 20 mark or anything, but I do think he's somebody that can steal at least 10, and his power is legit. So I love me some DeMeritt still.
Yeah, I like DeMeritt. My guy that I like, though, I was kind of surprised, is kind of the same thing. DeMeritt kind of is a product of the organization that he's in, is kind of why he's unprotected. And Jason Martin is my guy. He's an Astros outfielder, so they don't need any more of those.
Yeah, they're kind of good at the moment. If he gets taken, then we could be in an interesting spot. I don't know who would take him at this moment, but
well, looking at the quick depth chart things, obviously it's very, very early in the season and things can change. It seems like Detroit is going to move Castellanos to the corner outfield spot for Candelario to play third, but they need another guy in the other corner, and I think Jason Martin could be a decent Rule 5 grab for them. He's got some power, some speed. He had a nice walk rate over 10% until last year. Last year, when he got promoted to double A, the plate skills kind of went out of the way. Hopefully, it's just a small enough sample where I think he can bounce back. I would bet on it. I think it's no lose scenario to grab a guy like this. He profiles as a future fourth outfielder anyways on a good team. But he's looking at a guy who as recently as 2016 hit 23.
2020, right?
20, yeah.
Yeah,
decent play skills. He's a short, diminutive guy. You know, he's a left-handed swinger, right-handed thrower, and why not plug him in left field or right field if you're Detroit? I mean, last year they had Jim Adducci out there and Alex Presley, and it was just horrendous.
Yeah, I believe Martin was a first-round pick, if I'm not mistaken. And
eighth-round pick.
Was he an eighth-round pick?
Yes, 2013.
So, I don't know why I thought he was first. Anyways, college bat. You know, somebody that should have been a little bit more polished, but he is fairly – his hit tool is fairly good. I would say it's above average at this point. So, I, you know, if Detroit got him, I certainly would be intrigued.
I think 27 other organizations in the game protect him. It's just probably guilty by numbers in Houston.
Yeah, I agree. So, I love that name, Jason Martin. I think Travis DeMeritt is somebody we've already talked about on numerous occasions that we like. Let's see. I'm kind of looking through more names. Cole Stewart probably will be – grabbed by somebody as a reliever. I think you and I talked about this prior to the show starting, but
extreme ground ball tilt. He'll be useful as he gets more time in the bullpen. I mean, similar to how the Cardinals use Matt Bowman.
Yeah.
He was a heavy ground ball guy, and Cole Stewart's even heavier ground ball guy. So you can always, I love having guys like that in the bullpen. But I like Jordan Guerrero too, from the White Sox. He's kind of unprotected. It's a lefty, doesn't blow you away, but he's a solid back-end starter that gets things done. And a team like the Marlins, who don't have anybody in the rotation, could use somebody like that.
I agree. I absolutely agree with that. Other guys, the Rays ended up giving Nick Cufo the boot. I don't think that he either doesn't get taken by somebody. If somebody does, then I find it really ridiculous because the Rays don't have much catching depth. And Cufo has been really good defensively, which is what they look for first. So, former first-round pick, I don't really get it. But for fantasy, it's really a non-issue, so nobody really wants to worry about it. Another catcher that is certainly useful for fantasy that could also play first base, maybe DH in the AL as well, is Max Pentecost. He is not protected. You said that he doesn't get taken. I think he does get taken by somebody. The injuries are a problem, and we all kind of know this, but the upside is certainly there. He hasn't caught much. I think you said 20 games last year, which is certainly not going to get it done. His defense certainly will need work.
He caught in the fall league and looked okay, but it's hard to tell in that small sample.
Depends on where he goes, but if he doesn't go anywhere, then we will just keep on waiting it out with him. I do think long-term he has a ton of – we've talked about with catchers at nauseam here. Catchers take a while to develop, and they certainly don't hit their peak until later on in their careers. So we'll be waiting a while on Pentecost, but there still is a lot of intrigue with him. Michael DeLeon, I'm not enthused by at all. I think that he's definitely a defense-first guy. He probably should be let go by the Rangers. In terms of teams that might need his services, I can see a lot of teams doing that. He certainly fits the Royals bill. I think the Royals will probably be a team that possibly does it. Maybe even somebody like the Angels. Miami could use him as they're like Adini Hecheverria or Hecheverria, replacement. Lewin Diaz, a guy that I certainly loved last year on the first base preview for prospects. He is exposed right now, but I long-term, I still love him. I'm not really letting this affect my outlook on him.
Yeah, it's we talked about this a little bit pre-show too. It's a little bit hard for a first baseman only prospect that's never been higher than low A to get picked. But if you can somehow stash him, which San Diego stashed three Rule 5 guys last year, so anything is possible. Kevin Garnett screaming voice. Anything is possible. And I think that's dirty with how they did that last year, taking three Rule 5 guys and stashing them all, but whatever. And that's not the whole purpose of this, you know what I mean? But they still didn't even get the worst record in the league. They had three Rule 5 picks, and they didn't finish in the top five for worst record, which is kind of surprising. But a couple of decent dudes. Trevor Clifton from the Cubs could be taken. I liked him a couple years back.
I like Clifton. And, I've actually met him. He came into my place of work, randomly.
Oh, yeah, because Tennessee Smokies, right?
Yeah, so it was a year and a half ago or so, and I met him. I talked to him for a good bit. He was a really pretty cool cat. He drank a lot of I won't disclose that, but he likes to party.
He was responsible, of course.
He had a driver, so it was fine.
There you go. Chesney Young is another guy. I kind of like, he's an offensive base utility guy, kind of in the mold of like a Tommy La Stella type, high contact, can play a little bit all over the infield. Perfect Rule 5 dude for scenarios like this. There's a lot of talent out here. I like Carlos Tochi. I'm not giving up on that. He's just too raw. You can't hold a guy like that on the roster. Not even good defensively yet. He's all projection. There's a lot of interesting names out here. Ultimately,
the two long shots are, you know, DJ Peterson's a long shot that still has never really caught on quite yet. And then, you know, I would say the other long shot here is probably Ryan O'Hearn. I don't necessarily buy him.
I can't remember. I'm trying to think back if I've ever, I can't remember a first baseman corner outfield type gets taken in the Rule 5.
Yeah, it doesn't happen often.
It's really hard to sneak somebody through like that.
It typically is. But either way, I mean, I don't have many other names. Other than that, I think that we've covered a good amount of guys on this Rule 5 list here.
On target again, bro. One more name I do want to mention real quick. I've seen this kid play in person about 5, 6, 7 times. Victor Reyes, he was in the Fall League and the Rule 5 draft. He's eligible for Rule 5, and he's in the Fall League. They chose not to protect him. Really good hit tool. He can run. The numbers haven't translated over to speed yet. But Victor Reyes of the Diamondback system.
Yeah.
I think he's a little bit too raw. But if he's the dude I would try to grab and try to trade for if I was a bad team that needed an outfielder, because he can flat out hit. Not sure how much power projection, but I think he can hit 15 homers long term. He's a bigger dude. One thing I noticed too when I see him play, you always notice weird quirks. He has humongous feet. Like, really big feet, so you think he's a small framed guy. It's weird, but I don't know. Maybe he grows into those feet and hits some with some power. Who knows? It's all about projection, and so hopefully we can get some there.
Nick Birdie's also on the list. I think
Tommy John, so it might be easy enough to pass him through.
The one guy that I would hang my hat on, though, is the guy that you mentioned first off the top is Jason Martin. I think Jason Martin, of all these guys, probably has one of the better chances of sticking as an MLB regular. But, you know, to be frank, a lot of these guys just are, you know, we're talking about 20% chance or less. Even with somebody like Demerit, who I hope in the world, with all my might, ends up working out, it's probably not a great
chance. A lot of these guys, for a guy like Demerit, it's probably better for his long-term future if he doesn't get chosen.
Right.
Because being a Rule 5 player, you're not going to get regular at-bats, and he's a guy with his plate skill problems needs it.
Yeah, I remember some notable Rule 5 draft guys in the last couple of years. You had Tyler Goodell. He had a little bit of a, you know, he was the old Rays guy that ended up getting taken by the Phillies. Joey Ricard, another Rays guy that went over to the Orioles. He ended up working out for a little bit and not so much recently. I can't remember anybody else that really worked out.
Normally it's relievers and stuff that's not really fantasy relevant. But.
Yeah, so we just spent, you know, 15-minute segment on guys that more likely won't work out. But it is a little bit better crop this year than usual, so I'll get
it is.
That.
Yeah.
You want to plug some stuff, Matt? What's going on with you? I know we're about to work on the draft guide for this upcoming season, which is going to be awesome.
I'm plugging away my team prospect previews. They're going to be behind the draft guide wall this year, so make sure you get that. Always good content. We'll have some dynasty-related things in there, some articles on strategy and all that stuff, so hit me up there. I'm doing a lot of mock drafts this winter. If you invite me to one, odds are I'll probably do it because I'm an idiot. No, stuff like that. But other than that, I'm 35 followers away from 1,000 on Twitter. So that's
congratulations. Great. It really changes your life once you get to that point. So
I'm 900 and I got about 15 people that want to hear what I got to say, and about 950 robots that follow me. So it's kind of exciting. But 35 more and I get that. But no, other than that, great talking to you. It's been a while. Hopefully it's not this long next time. And prospect season. Off season at FWFB is when we work more than in season. So
I'm definitely happy, man. I will have more time this year. For those that don't know, I just had a lot going on with my job, and things are calming down a little bit now, so I should be kind of full go going into this year. So it'll be nice. But you can reach yourself, Matt, on Twitter at MDTomp FWFB. Check out all of his prospect stuff. It's really, really good stuff.
Follow me.
Don't follow him if you dislike the Cubs, because that's gonna be a problem for you. Although Matt loves the Cubs too at heart. He just won't admit it ever. It's fine though. It's fine.
Tired of this.
You'll love the Cardinals even more once they get Giancarlo Stanton. Oh, quick, before we get out of here, Ohtani, give me a team that he goes to. Your predicted team that he goes to.
Yankees.
Mariners. I'm gonna say Rangers.
Mariners and Dodgers.
I'm going Rangers. That's my final answer. Am I hoping the Rays get them? And then we end up having McKay and Ohtani as our two-way players. What? That'd be awesome. But
if there's a GM out there, if there aren't 30 bids put in on Ohtani, that GM that doesn't bid should be fired for malpractice.
You know what Ohtani wants, though, right? He wants like full-on reports from each of these organizations stating what they know about him, why they want him to come there, what they could do to help him kind of migrate into the city well, and you know, just all of these things. And honestly, like, good job. That's doing your due diligence right there.
Because he's setting himself up for a place that he's going to be for the next 10 years. So
I promise you this, though. He's going to be overtaken and fancy. And I don't even know how people are going to score him in these leagues.
He's going to be overrated as a hitter and a pitcher, but whatever. You know how those fantasy people are.
I bet that fantasy games make us take them separate. I bet they make you take them as a pitcher only or as a hitter only.
I think in two separate ways. I think that's how you have to do it.
Yeah, I bet that's what happens. It's going to be unfortunate. Because if
he's hitter and pitcher, you have to take him 1-1, right?
I wouldn't say 1-1, but I would say in the first three rounds, absolutely.
Yeah.
Because we don't know how good of a hitter he is. I mean, if we're looking just at hitters, I mean, we'll go into this more whenever we find out where he goes and all that stuff. But
I heard
in general,
for his offensive, Seth Smith or Matt Joyce.
Yikes. Yeah, and that's the thing is, like, somebody like Jose Abreu, when he was coming over, I was super high on him because you could get him in the 10th to 12th round, and his overall offensive upside was that of a third-round, second-round player. In that first season that he came here, he was a borderline first-round player that year. But somebody like Ohtani, I don't envision him being anywhere close to a third-round type of guy just with his bat. So no. We'll see how that plays out. But, you can reach me on Twitter, at Mike Warner, FWFB. You can definitely listen to the show. We are kind of assembling all of our guys for this upcoming draft guide, content for the site, all the team previews that we did last year. That's all returning. We have a lot of awesome writers and staff coming up for this season. So baseball is going to be better than ever. I'm really excited about it. I'm excited about the guys we have on as well. We've added some really, really good quality guys. So I'm excited for it. You guys should be too. Have a great holidays and Thanksgiving and Christmas. I don't think we'll do another prospect show before then, but if we do, that'd be awesome. Hit us up on Twitter to let us know any guys that you might want us to talk about for the next show or anything. We're kind of just freelancing until the season started. So, for Matt and myself, thank you for listening and have a great holidays. Every night.